Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
Welcome back to The Fighter versus The Writer. I am your host, as always. I am Damon Martin, and today I am joined by one of the busiest guys in all of mixed martial arts. He's a top fighter, but these days he's best known as a top coach, also a top analyst. I welcome back a good friend of mine, James Krause. The James Krause. Welcome to the show. How are you?
I'm good, man. How about you?
I'm fantastic. Thank you for doing this. I really appreciate it. It's funny, I've known you for a long time, and we've done interviews all over the years. I don't know if I've ever asked you, where did the James Krause come from?
This is kind of a stupid story. So Twitter started up and all that. So this has been 10, 15 years ago, whatever it was. And I was looking for a handle on Twitter, Facebook, whatever. Instagram wasn't around at the time. And James Krause was actually taken, just regular James Krause was actually taken. And it was taken by a guy that I went to college with. There's another guy named James Krause in the college that I went to. And anyway, I didn't want to put James Krause 155 or anything like that, because I figured at some point I would switch weight classes. But I didn't know what to put, so I just put that. And I was like, I'll just change it later. And it just stuck. It never.
I like it. I personally like it. It's the simplicity of it. You know what I mean? You get a lot of weird nicknames in this sport. I think the James Krause is pretty damn catchy.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is. You can't really pick your nickname. I didn't like it, but everybody, it just stuck. You know what I mean? This is what it is.
Yeah, well, I like it. So, I count me amongst that group that does like it. James, of course, as I said, you're one of the busiest guys in the sport. You know, it's funny. I see your name and I obviously tweet at you occasionally, and I'm always you're always doing stuff. And I just realized that I looked at your record just before we did the interview, just because I always like to, do my research. October of this year was a little over 1 year since you fought now. Now I know you tried to jump in a fight a couple months ago on literally a day's notice, because that's just what the James Krause does. Because you've been so busy with coaching, have you kind of put your own fight career in the back burner a little bit while you've been focusing on the gym and coaching? What's going on?
Yeah, man, it's tough. I think we have 17 guys in the UFC now. We have one in Bellator, and then we have our own show on Fight Pass that we do. And it's just, I don't want to say I haven't told anybody that I'm retiring, but I'm not really actively looking to fight or anything like that. So I don't know. It's weird. I've said this quite a bit. There's three things that I wanted at the end of this whole thing. And one that was I wanted to go out on a win. Two, I wanted to go out on my terms. I didn't want to have the UFC say hey man, you've lost three in a row. We should probably look at, we're gonna cut you or whatever, one of those nudge things where the fighter just doesn't realize hey, you should have been done a long time ago. We see it all the time. And then lastly, I just wanted to create some financial freedom from the sport of MMA. And I've done all three of those things. As it sits right now, if I left today, all three of those things are accomplished. And so I'm not saying I'm done. Obviously, I'll jump in on a day's notice or if that just seems easier for me. I train every day. It is what it is. But I enjoy coaching. I'm 70 something fights pro and amateur. October of this year was actually my 15th year fighting since my first fight. At some point you got to be done, right? And like I've always said, I wanted to quit a little bit early rather than a little bit late. Once again, I'm not saying I'm done fighting, but I'm not also actively looking to fight either. So I don't know what that means. But if I was done today, if I never fight again, I'd be happy with what I've done as a fighter. And I would be even more so happy with the transition into building a team and coaching.
Yeah, it's funny you say that because, you know, outside of the one, you know, the split decision loss you had when you jumped up a weight class, took a fight on extremely short notice, a fight that absolutely no offense whatsoever to Trevin Giles, I thought you won. You know, you've been on a great streak. I mean, you've had like a great, you know, great streak in a row, and then beating Claudio Silva is a big one as well. But you've been so busy with the coaching and the gym and all the other things you're doing. Like, is it, in a weird way, it almost feel like, you know, that's kind of taken, I won't say taken the place of fighting, but it just feels like priorities have shifted. Is that fair to say?
100%. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of times what the problem is with the fighters is this is one of the hardest sports in the world to quit because they want that drug. They want that highest high and they don't want to go out on that lowest low, you know? So they're constantly seeking the drug again. And for me, I'm still getting the drug. You know what I mean? It's just, I'm getting it differently now. And so it's an easy segue into coaching for me. Like I'm still heavily involved in the sport. I'm still at the fights, you know, I'm still fulfilled. You know, as a competitor, I'm still being fulfilled from the MMA standpoint. And honestly, more so even, you know what I mean? Like, you can watch me at the end of my fights. Like, I don't smile. Like, that's not a big deal to me. You know, like, I've been fighting for 15 years, man. Like, and I'm not saying that I'm not happy to win or anything like that. But like, watch me after one of my wins and then watch me after one of my people wins. You know, after one of my people wins, you know, it's different. So I get much more fulfilled out of watching other people's success than I do my own.
Yeah, so not retired, but you know, you're not calling Sean Shelby or Mick Maynard saying, "Hey, get me a fight." But you know, Chris Curtis is around, 24 hours notice. You might jump in there. We might see you jump back in there that way, something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he took the fight on a day's notice. Like he trains every day. We're both 70 pounders. We were going to fight at 85. Like, you know what I mean? Like it made sense. I liked the matchup. I'm sure he liked the matchup too. I don't know, but like. He took it on a day's notice. I would have taken it on a day's notice. We're both 70 pounders fighting at 85. Like, was it, you know what I mean? Like, okay, like, let's do it. You know what I mean? Like, it's, yeah, I still train every day, man. Like, I did an hour drilling and 5 rounds grappling just an hour ago. So like, I'm, you know what I mean? Like I train every day still.
Yeah, it's funny. Back when I was at another company, I don't want to mention their names because, you know, a little bit of ill will towards them, maybe a little bit on my side. I'll let that go. We did stuff with the Ultimate Fighter back then, and we were doing like weekly video blogs and things like that. And you were doing analyst stuff at that point. And I know you were coaching at that point, too. You had the gym. Did you ever imagine, well, I guess the dream scenario is kind of what you built, right? Like you built Glory into becoming not only a great gym, but like you mentioned, 17 fighters in the UFC. I mean, I don't know, like, in your wildest dreams, did you imagine this is where it would be? Because you really have created, you know, one of the top gyms in the country, and you become one of the top coaches in the country. I mean, it's a pretty amazing accomplishment because we got to be honest, it's not easy to do that. We hear about guys opening gyms all the time, but that doesn't mean you're going to actually create a successful team.
Yeah. Yes, I did know it was going to happen. I just didn't think it would happen this fast. I didn't think it would happen while I was still fighting, you know? And, but we have an amazing culture, man. Like we have a really good culture. We have a really hardworking team. We've done a good job staying small, but getting bigger, if that makes sense. Like it's a very tight knit group. I think we had 52 in our morning practice this morning. And it's kind of like Kansas City in itself. You know what I mean? It's a big city, I guess, but like, it's still got a small town feel. We're a very blue collar team. Everybody works hard and, we have a great culture. It's a blue collar culture. Everybody works hard. Everybody helps each other. And, I'm really proud of the team. You know, everybody's bought in, you know, and that I think, I don't know. I'd like to think that comes from some of the stuff that I'm doing, but, everybody's bought in on what we're doing. Everybody is all in the same direction. And yeah, it's pretty cool to see.
I had this conversation a lot with Matt Brown, who's a good friend of mine. You know, he has his gym here in Columbus, and he's getting towards the latter part of his career, and he's acknowledged that. And he's told me many, many times, as much as he loves fighting, and he absolutely loves fighting, he's like, I know one day I will be a better coach than I will be a fighter. Giving back to the next generation of fighters, I will eventually become a better coach than I'm a fighter. Now, again, you're not retired, but I know you said you're not actively, you know, looking to fight again right now. Do you feel like in that way, kind of the same thing with you, like you become a better coach? Like, do you like coaching more than you liked fighting?
Yeah, I do. At the grand scheme of things, like, man, like it gets tough at times, like travel and stuff like that. Like I've been on the road. This is like my first weekend off in a long time, probably 10 weeks, 11 weeks, something like that. So like I'm on the road almost every weekend. So that can get a little tedious, right? But like, everything is in moderation, right? I mean, water is great, but like if you have too much, it can kill you. So you know what I mean? Like it's just everything's good in moderation. But overall, yes, I do love coaching more than I do fighting.
I know throughout your career, James, and I know from us doing interviews and talking, you've never been the guy who's looking for, you know, people to be like, oh my God, James Krause is the greatest thing ever, and, you know, things like that. You're not the guy who looks for praise on social media, all those kind of things. But what does it mean for you that your work is being recognized? I know I've tagged you a bunch on Twitter when I hear you in the corner and see you coaching. I'm just like, man, like, and I bring it up because you're not that guy. You're not the guy to go on Twitter and say, I'm the greatest ever. You know, look at me. I'm writing books and, you know, put me on Twitter and all this kind of stuff. You're not that guy. So when I acknowledge you on Twitter or social media, I do that because you're not that guy. You're not the guy to go out there and say, pat me on the back, I'm the best ever. But do you appreciate that your work is being recognized? Because I think at this point, we've seen it from media, from other fighters, from analysts. Like, we're recognizing what you're building at Glory is pretty special.
Yeah, I appreciate our work getting noticed. Yes, absolutely. Because it's not just me, man. Like, A, I have a team of coaches that help out a ton. But, man, it takes a lot. You know what I mean? These fighters, they put a lot of trust in me. And, yeah, it does. To answer your question, yes, it means a lot to me when people notice that. Because I work hard, man. I work really hard. I've dedicated and sacrificed, like, pretty much my entire adult life for the sport. And more ways than most people can even imagine. And it does feel good to know that sacrifice has paid off to a degree. You know, like I do feel like some of the other top coaches are starting to like recognize me as a peer to them. And yeah, I mean, like it's pretty cool. It really is. And I try to watch some of the other guys, you know, the other top coaches that I really respect. And they play a similar game, you know, the top guys, they don't, it's just like, how can we get everybody better? You know what I mean? And it's good, man. It's all those guys, all the good coaches, in my opinion, that I really respect are big into leadership and culture as well. And that's not good leadership is, you know, saying, hey, look at me, blah, 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 blah. That's not what that is. So I think people, we build as a team, you know? So like to answer your question, yes, I'm really proud that people are starting to recognize what we as a team have built, not what I have built. Was I a part of that? 100%. Was I a big part of it? Yes, but it's not all me. You know, I'm just happy that everybody is starting to recognize our hard work together for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Let me shift gears a little bit. One thing I want to talk to you about, and it's been a big subject lately in MMA, and I know you see it because, you know, you've been there, is the culture of cornering in mixed martial arts. And I know you saw the discussion. I'm sure you heard about a couple of weeks ago the whole situation that with Aspen Ladd and her coach, you know, very vehemently, you know, kind of, I won't say yelling, but very, you know, very much, you know, trying to, I don't know if you want to call it motivation, yeah. I don't know, badgering. I don't know. There's a lot of different opinions on that. One thing I've always appreciated about you, James, and this is one of the things I've always complimented you on, is you are such a great corner man, and there is an art to it. Let's be honest, just being a coach is not just being a corner man. There's two different things there, and I know it's not one size fits all, but I saw a tweet or I saw a thing on Instagram after Tim Elliott's fight, and you took responsibility on yourself. You said I 100% thought we won rounds 1 and 2, and you basically apologized for getting it wrong. But there's no right or wrong answer, and every fighter is going to be different about what they need. But I want to get your opinion on where we're at with cornering, because like I'm a big believer in honesty, and I think that, you know, I'm not saying you're telling your fighter that, you know, they suck by saying, hey, you lost these first two rounds, something's got to change.
Oh, I don't think there's
So kind of walk me through it, because I'm curious, because I hear, and you know, you heard it too. Some coaches, some corners are like, we're doing great. I think you won those first two rounds. And everyone watches like they did not win those. There's no way they won either of those rounds. Like, I want to get your opinion on this, because I think brutal honesty is good. But like when you look at the Aspen Ladd situation, like, is it too much? Like, I don't know. You tell me.
I'll actually defend Jim West here. Like, I have a couple of questions for us. Like, one, would we be asking these same questions if Aspen was a man? I don't think we would. Two, they've been together for like 9 years. A lot of people don't know that they're a couple. Like, did you know that?
I did, but only more recently, within the last like year or so.
Yeah, they're a couple. So if anybody knows how to talk to her, and another thing is like, he's talked to her like that before in between rounds, and she won, and he was praised for it. So it's like, man, you got to know who you're talking to, bro. Like, you got to know your fighter. You got to, you know what I mean? Like, I can't talk to one person the same way I talk to another. Like, different personalities. Like, I make all my fighters take a personality test, and like, it helps me understand how they're going to connect with things and understand how can I talk to them? How can I connect with them to get them to understand the easiest way? But dude, if anybody knows how to talk to her, it's him. You know what I mean? Like, and if he felt that was the way, this is my whole thing. I think this whole conversation would be null and void if Asma was a man. I don't think anybody would be saying shit.
Well, yeah, I agree. And I actually said, we go back, you know, a couple of podcasts, I actually had Matt Brown on as a co-host for that episode. And I said, I think people are overreacting. And I said, that was part of it was because she's a woman. And I said that, Listen, you know, at the end of the day, he knows her better than we know her. He knows what she needs. Like one of the reasons I always compliment your cornering is because you are, you know, I've heard you in your corner with your fighters. You are brutally honest with them. You tell them, but you also motivate them. Like it's a balancing act. And I feel like, in that moment, like, she wasn't doing anything. Like, he had to get her going. And you know what? She had her best rounds.
What does he lose? She was already losing. And once again, man, he's done the same thing before, and he was praised for it. Like, the internet blew up over how he was great coaching, great cornering. And it was good. It was really good. But now he does this. It's just, bro, these people don't know shit. You know what I mean? Like, most of the people don't know shit. And, like, that's the reality of it is – because these people don't know anything, man, and they're just trying to make comments. And even some of the fighters don't know what the fuck they're talking about. You know what I mean? It's just like, dude, like, man, if anybody knows how to talk to this woman, it is this one dude. I guarantee that. If there's anybody on the planet that knows how to talk to this woman and get her fired up to get into a fist fight, it's him. You know what I mean? Like, it's not only it's her coach, it's her spouse or whatever, you know, whatever you want to call it. They've been together for years. They've trained together for years. Like, you know what I mean? Like, anyway, but you're right. You're right. There's coaching, and then there's cornering, and then there's motivating, there's leading. There's a lot of different things that go into it. And it's not, I've seen good coaches be terrible cornermen, and I've seen not so good coaches be great cornermen. And, I mean, a corner can lose you the fight. I've seen it. You know what I mean? Like, shit, I've done it. You know what I mean? Like, it is what it is, man. You know, it's just when you're I say this all the time to my guys, like, whenever you play at the highest level, Steph Curry said this. I think it was Steph Curry or maybe Chris Paul or one of the big NBA guys. He said, if you play at this level long enough, you're going to get shook. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to get dropped on your ankles once. You know what I mean? Like, it's going to happen. And if you play this game like I play every weekend, like Jim West plays every weekend or whoever, you're going to get shook. You know what I mean? Like, you're going to get dropped on your ankles a couple of times, and you got to take it with the punches and go, you know, because the reality is 99% of the people saying their opinion don't know what the fuck they're talking about.
100%. That's true. And it's funny because when I watch you corner, like, one of the reasons I really, like, it sounds weird to say I enjoy watching you corner, but it is because I learn when you're talking to your fighters and again, the way you talk to Tim Elliott may not be the way you talk to one of your other guys or girl or whoever, but I love that because I watch it. And the reason I'm so fascinated by it, and I really am fascinated by it, is because you have 1 minute and you have to basically assess everything that happens in a round, in a 5 minute round. In that next 60 seconds, you have to tell them what went right, what went wrong, and what to do next. And that's a really special talent to do in 60 seconds, because I'll be honest, there's a lot, like, when I watch, like, that crazy wild round that happened between Merab Dvashvili and Marlon Moraes, I'm still trying to figure out what I just watched in 5 minutes. Yeah. Like, it takes me, like, a good 2 minutes just to figure out what happened. As a coach, you've got to get your guy or girl, you know, back ready for the next round. Like, it's there is an art form to it.
Yeah, definitely. 100%. Like, a lot of, I think it's a lot in your personality. Like, this goes back to the personality test thing that I make my guys do, but it's called gross motor skills versus fine motor skills. Like, some people are able to see how it is unfolding right in front of them. And then others are able to see like a little bit more into the future. It's the difference between a quarterback and a running back. You know what I mean? Like they're able to see like what's going on and then they're able to see it unfold right in front of them. So it's like present and future, right? Like, are you able to anticipate what is happening and what's going to happen? And I think that's with that's what makes a good cornerman is like, A, is recognizing like, okay, if my fighter got in trouble, what happened? What is getting us in trouble? You know, what is the action that is we're getting consequence for, and how do we fix that? And then on the other side of that is like the opposite. Like, what are we having success with, and what are they lost with? What do they need to adapt to us with? Okay, cool. They can't reap. They have no takedown defense on the right side. Reap, you know, whatever. Like, okay, let's keep driving that home. And it's you go to the well until the water runs dry, you know. And a lot of people, even at a high level, aren't able to adapt mid fight. You know, the guys that are able to adapt mid fight do really well. And I'm really big on specific coaching, and I get a lot of criticism for this. Like, I'm with my fighter, I talk the whole time, and I've studied psychology. People like to hear you'll hear me say, "Great job, Tim Elliott." You know, people subconsciously, they want to hear their name. They're rewarded for their name. You know what I mean? It's kind of like how you treat a dog. Good boy, good boy. You know what I mean? It's the same thing. It's the same action. And whether they're conscious of it or not, it does work. It's a proven fact. It does work. And I like to be very specific. You know, some people are, you know, look for the cross hook. Okay, well, why are you looking for the cross hook? Like, what do you see that's open? And I think one of the things that I have is I'm able to see, like, what is working in front of me. And that's, I don't, you know, there's a lot of other coaches that can do that as well, but I'm just more vocal with it. I don't know.
Well, I think, like I said, one of the reasons I love listening to your corner is because I, like, as a guy watching the sport, covering it and writing about it, like, when you are talking to your fighter in the corner, you're talking to them, but you're also talking to me because I'm watching them, like, okay, let me see them go out and execute it. And so many times your guys and girls go out and do that and execute them. Like, that, again, I know you probably get sick hearing this, but that's one of the reasons why I drop your name on Twitter, like, every weekend when you're coaching. I hear you coaching. I'm just like, this is awesome stuff, because they listen and you have that relationship built with them. And I am, if you don't mind me asking, I'm fascinated about the personality test. Where did that come from?
It's the Briggs-Myers test. It's like, they did it in the military for like World War II, I think. It was World War I, World War II, something like that. Yeah. It's a simple test. It takes like 15 minutes to do, but what it'll do, it'll tell me how you like to be talked to. It's kind of like, you know, the five love languages or whatever. It's kind of like that, I guess. Like, how am I able to connect to you the easiest? Like, what, like, are you emotional? Are you mechanical? You know, are you introvert, extrovert? Like, what makes you tick? Like, and it talks about like being friends with an ISDF or, you know, whatever your four letters are, you know, and it talks about those things. And it's easier for me to like, oh, okay, well, that makes sense. That's why whenever I yelled at him, it didn't work. I just need to talk to this guy more, and then I can yell at you, Julian, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, whoever, you know, it's just, but that for sure. Another thing is, I think a lot of people don't understand this, is like, whenever I'm talking and I'm giving success, like, yeah, hey, that a boy. I'm also talking to the judges too. Like, that's another thing that people don't like. They connect my action, my request, the success, and my reaction. That goes there, boom, bank that. You know what I mean? Like, and if I give a reaction every time my guy hits, that's why when the ties, you land a low kick, that, oh, hey, that's the same idea, only now if you hear my request, the request goes through, and then, oh, and then that, you bank that. You know what I mean? So I'm not saying like I'm cheating the judges or anything, but it's all psychology, man. Like, I studied that a lot, and it is a real thing.
Oh, I'll never forget. I was because a lot of people who don't, unfortunately, the folks who don't get to go to the events, and of course I've been to dozens. When you don't have the commentary, you hear all the things around the cage. You hear the coaching, you hear all the things. And I remember, I'll never forget this fight. Martin Campman fought Diego Sanchez in Louisville, Kentucky. And in my opinion, Martin clearly won the fight. He was landing the better punches, but Diego was so aggressive and throwing so many shots. He was missing. I think he probably landed like 12% of his shots that fight. But every time Diego threw a combination, the crowd went nuts. The crowd was going crazy. And I guarantee you, without a doubt in my mind, that played a factor in the judges scoring that fight. Because watching cage side, it was hard. Did he connect? I couldn't quite tell if he connected, but the crowd's losing their mind. He must have connected, right? It's absolutely plays in the psychology of judging. And we can't deny that happens.
100%. You're absolutely correct. It for sure happens. It's a real thing. And, you know, I don't know to what degree, but, like, I'll take every little, you know what I mean? We're dealing with the one percenters here, man. You know what I mean? Like, I'll take every little advantage I can get.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's, I mean, it's brilliant. It's funny because you talk so much about psychology. And again, you know the X's and O's as a coach. You know the ins and outs. You know how to execute a kimura. You know how to do all those kind of things. But coaching and cornering, as we've said, goes so far beyond that. It's funny to me. I feel like you and Matt need to, like, sit down and have a conversation, because Matt Brown says a lot of the same stuff. He studies psychology, reads a lot of books, and takes that into his coaching. And I imagine that's a huge part of it, because, again, it's more than just the X's and O's. It's more than you need to, you know, go left when he's going right. There's a lot more to it than just that.
Yeah. Well, another thing that I think helps me is, like, being a fighter. Like, I see a lot of those moments when somebody's ready to break and, like, they want out of the fight, or they're ready to give up a position, you know, and, like, if my guy trusts me, you've watched me corner enough to know when I feel adamant about something, you fucking know. You know what I mean? Like, I'll go crazy. You know what I mean? Like, if I see you got to squeeze, like, you're like, go, 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 go. Like, I'm all over it, you know? And, like, if I tell you to press, like, that, and you hear the urgency in my voice, there's a reason for it. Like, I'm not just saying this shit just to say, like, if I tell you, a great example is watching Julian fight Maki Pitolu. Like, I knew Maki was just tired of trying to wrestle him. I knew he would give up a position if we just kept pressing him. And Julian's got some hammers, and he kept pressing him, and, you know, it ended up how it did, third round. Anaconda choke, which is a transition. We worked two things throughout that entire camp so much, hundreds of reps. One was the back defense that got him out of trouble in the second or third round. And then two was that guillotine to Anaconda transition that won him the fight.
Yeah, it's amazing. And I know you talked about, you know, how much coaching has become, you know, your kind of your life now. I mean, of course, you're a great, you know, father and husband, all those kind of things too. But I'm saying, like, in professional life, coaching has become such a big part of it. You've started to really build Glory MMA into such a tremendous gym, and you've got a lot of great fighters out of there. What, you know, in your own career, because you did accomplish a lot and you did a lot as a fighter, and I'm sure there's a part of you that, you know, of course you would have loved to have, you know, fought for a UFC championship and gone to do those things. But what would it, like, would it mean more to you at this point, like, to build up a Julian Marquez, to build up, you know, one of your fighters and see them become a champion? Like, can you even wrap your head around, like, what that would mean to you again, to, like, to have that happen? Because almost most of your fighters, and I want to give credit also, you've had a lot of people seek you out now, which I love. I love seeing that. People coming to your gym to say, hey, help me out, you know, teach me, things like that. But so many of your guys and girls are homegrown. They've been there with you for years. What would it mean to you to build one of them into a champion, to build one of them into a UFC champion?
I dare you to go back and find an interview of me saying that I want to be a world champion, or I want to be, you know, this or that or whatever. You won't find it, because I've never really cared. I do want to coach a world champion, though. You know, that is a bucket list goal of mine, is to win a world title in a major organization. And, you know, I think I have a few guys that can do it for sure. I really do.
Who, you know, I don't want you to single anybody out, but you mentioned 17 fighters in the UFC, Bellator. Of course, we just saw you work with James Gallagher. And I want to say, I know he didn't come away with the win against Patchy Mix, but I saw so many improvements in James Gallagher since he's been working with you. And I can only imagine, because I'm a big believer in time, you know, builds. And I think the more time you get with the James Gallagher, the better he's going to get. But kind of look at the next tier. You got a lot of young people working at Glory as well. Can you give me a couple names, like, who we need to be on the lookout for in the next year or so, that whether we're talking Contender Series, Ultimate Fighter, getting into UFC, who's the next crop of Glory MMA fighters we should be on the lookout for?
In the UFC or...
Basically young up and comers. We need to know their names now, because a year from now, 2 years from now, we're going to know their names.
Jeff Molina is the first one that comes to mind. I know he's starting to get a little bit of steam behind him. Kid's a buzzsaw. He's really good, man. Really good 25er, really good striker, really good striker. David Onama, took the fight on, a couple days notice at 155 against Mason Jones. He's a 45er that doesn't cut a ton of weight. He's never fought at 50. I think he weighed 158 when they fought. And he took the, he was on vacation in Alabama when he took the fight. You know, he was literally on a week long vacation there. So David is really tough. He's young and he's athletic. He hits like a truck. He's really good. Mike Breeden, fan favorite fighter. Like, he's a live by the sword, die by the sword guy. He's somebody's going unconscious. You're very rarely going to watch that guy go to decision. Somebody's, you know, if he's not knocking somebody out, he's probably going to get knocked out. Cause that's just his style is get phone booth you and, big hooks and big shots. He's a big puncher. We've seen Trey Ogden and Joe Holmes just got signed for the Looking for a Fight. Both those guys had amazing performances. I know I'm missing some, man, but we have a really good crop of young guys. You know, and those are just the guys that have like three fights or less in the UFC. You know, they're I'm forgetting some, but man, we have a really good group of guys right now that are just phenomenal.
Yeah, as if you don't have enough on your plate. And I don't know, I'm sure you do kind of remember this back when we did the Ultimate Fighter stuff. I said, James, you need to be an analyst. Like, you need to get in there and be an analyst. And yeah, you did right after that. You started doing the analyst, but you're so busy right now. Like, do you still want to do the analyst stuff at some point? Or is just coaching and things keeping you so busy, it's hard for you to tear away from that? Because I imagine most UFC fights, you're in the corner, so it's probably hard for you to ever actually do the analyst thing anymore.
Yeah, I do love that. I really do. And at some point I want to revisit that. I think I'm supposed to start commentary for LFA here pretty soon. So that would be pretty cool. Yeah, I do. It's just really tough for me to commit. Those guys want commitment like 2-3 months out, and it's just really difficult for me, because if I have a fighter comes up, that's my commitment is to my guys. You know what I mean? Like, that's 100%, you know. And yeah, so it's tough with the schedule for me to do that. Like, I think on my Southwest, I think on my Southwest flights alone, not counting other flights, I think I'm over 40 flights this year. Jeez. On Southwest alone. And that's not, you know, I've taken other airlines, you know what I mean? Like, so I'm on the road almost every weekend.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I think that's one thing that gets missed. Like, you look at a Daniel Cormier, who does a tremendous job with the analyst stuff and does the commentary. But he, even though he coaches at AKA, he's not a head coach. He's not Javier Mendez, who needs to be in the corner. You are the head coach. If one of your guys is fighting, if Julian's fighting, let's say, you're going to be in his corner. You're not going to be pulling analyst duty. So that, I imagine that makes it that much tougher for you to commit to anything like that.
Yeah, I hear a lot about that, you know, like Khabib's getting a ton of praise, like he's helping those, like, but that's the same thing. He's not their head coach. You know what I mean? And I've built these guys from ground up, a lot of them. And this is not a shot on him. I think he's doing great. And obviously everybody in corners is a fucking monster. You know, he's amazing. So that's not a shot on him at all, but it's just different. It is a different role. You know what I mean? Like, you're 100% correct in that. Like, I'm coaching these guys on a daily basis. Like, I worked with Grant Dawson this morning individually. You know, I work with every guy I have in the UFC at least once a week individually.
Yeah, that's another one. I love Grant Dawson, man. That kid's a monster. I think he's got such a bright future ahead of him. And I'll tell you what, James, now that you've done this once, and I know you're like the busiest dude in the world, but I'm just going to tell you ahead of time, I'm going to pull you back here to do this again. I'm just letting you know, yeah, you're not going to be off the hook. Thank you for doing this, man. I really appreciate it. It's so funny. Like, I've texted you, and I always tweet at you and stuff, but you're always so busy. I really do appreciate you doing this. And man, and I know you, I say it again, I really do mean it. I know you don't do it for the praise. You don't do it for like the accolades, but sincerely, I think you've become one of the best coaches in this sport. And I really do get a thrill out of watching you go out there and do your thing and become one of the best coaches. Cause like I said, it's an amazing thing. Cause again, it's not easy. What you do is not easy. And for you to do what you're doing is pretty amazing. So keep up the great work, man. You're killing it to glory. You're killing it with all your fighters. And sincerely, thank you so much for doing this. I really do appreciate it. And 100%, I'm going to be pulling you back in here, just so you know.
Yeah, man. Hey, I had fun, dude. Like, anytime, if I'm free, it's no problem at all, man. Feel free to text me anytime. I had a lot of fun.
Absolutely, James. We'll talk soon, okay?
All right, brother.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
There you go. The James Krause coming in strong. Again, make sure you tune in each and every week to The Fighter versus The Writer. I think next week, if I'm not mistaken, I think next week we'll have Anthony Smith is going to come in as a co-host for the first time. We're going to break down Font versus Aldo and get into UFC 269, which is coming up in a couple weeks. It's kind of crazy. The end of the year is fast approaching, with only three more UFC cards left in 2021, of course. So we'll be getting to that. Of course, we also got a big Bellator card coming up in December with Sergio Pettis and Kyoji Horiguchi. That's going to be a great one as well. So we'll have lots to talk about in December, of course, coming up. I want to say a big thank you to James Krause once again for doing the show. Make sure you check us out on all of your favorite podcast platforms, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and, of course, you can also find us over on MMAFighting.com. I want to say a big thank you once again for everyone tuning in. We'll see you next week for another edition of The Fighter versus The Writer. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you then.
Listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.